Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OhioFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OhioFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G. Because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
All right, film study with Ken McCusick. It is still the Ravens bye week, so we are going to continue to do our mid-season evaluations. Ken McCusick, how are you doing this week?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
I'm doing all right. I'm excited to talk about this offense because as a whole, they've been frustrating. And I can't wait to see your thoughts on some players as we break them down, the individuals. We don't need to get into the detail of explaining the categories again, but if you can just do a quick refresher of the categories.
Yeah, absolutely. So five categories: young producers, those are guys on their rookie deals who are usually at least starting or playing pretty well. Developmental players, who are the next set of young players who you hope can develop into your young producers. The top two categories are how you beat the cap. You have guys who play above their cap contribution, or make a contribution above their cap, I guess I should say. And that's how you beat the curve, so to speak, in the NFL, where the salary cap levels everything and rules all, frankly. So those two categories are very key. Then we have the third category, veterans playing for market value. So those are people that are often cornerstone players you're paying a lot of money to, and they better be producing at that level. The next is the troublesome category, the veteran cap value concerns. Those are guys you're probably already overpaying, and you need to figure out, do we need to get rid of the guy? And then the fifth category is transitional. As Josh mentioned last week, that may mean transitioning into a lazy boy, but it's a group of players who are on their way out in all likelihood.
Hold on. I'm looking at your transitional players, and I do not see Brashard Perriman there.
That doesn't, right. Well, that you doesn't can complain make any about sense. It when we get to
we'll
the
get
right
to
point.
That, but today we are going to go through the offense. If for some reason you this first time you're listening to us and you're saying, what about the defense? That was on the previous episode. So just go on your little podcast player and listen to the previous one if you want to hear the defense before the offense.
And they should subscribe, too, and write a review.
That's an even better. If you went to iTunes or iTunes or whatever podcast player you use. I use one called Overcast that works really well. Hit subscribe onto Film Study with Kevin Huguzik. Give it 5 stars. Write a review. And then you've got every episode.
There you go.
So let's get into it. Let's get with these young producers.
Okay, so the young producers on offense there are four on the offense, and you'll see for some various reasons it's not as good a situation as there are on the defense, as if you didn't know that the offense wasn't as good. But the four guys who are young producers are Alex Collins, second-year player, James Hurst, who's in his fourth-year player, and he is a transitional player last year on his way out and is now a young producer. That's as big a jump as you can make this kind of evaluation.
But that's also a concerning jump about – he's producing this year. What about next year?
Well, I agree with that, but what I'm gonna go with the ugly duckling thing, that he was really a swan at guard and not this ugly duckling at tackle.
Gotcha.
is the best hope I've got for explaining James Hurst's upgrade.
Okay.
All right. The next player is Ryan Jensen, who has had a terrific season and is one of the top centers in the league, and hopefully the Ravens are able to sign him long term. Fourth year player though also. And Ronnie Stanley, a second-year player at left tackle, who just came up with what appears to be a shoulder injury in the last game.
Right.
And they have aggravated it.
So these are the guys that have been you could get excited for this year. They were fun. They've been fun to watch.
Yeah, they've played well on offense, those four guys. The big concern in here is that two of them are impending free agents, while none of the five on defense are past their second season. So Collins and Stanley are in the second season, but Hurst and Jensen are in their fourth, and the Ravens probably are only going to be able to afford to keep one of them. So we'll see how it works out. I expect an offer to be made to Jensen. He's, I think, the surer bet of the two, that's probably the way it'll go. If the Ravens can't afford Jensen or somebody, you know, Jensen holds out until free agency before he tries to come to a deal, then I think it's possible they end up bringing Hurst back. But looking at the competition coming back at guard, it becomes less likely that James Hurst is the guy to win that job, where I think it's much more likely Ryan Jensen is the guy to win the center role.
All right. You said this is Collins' second year?
That's right. Alex Collins played with Seattle last year in a limited role.
Right. Surprised that they let him go after just 1 year.
So were a lot of Seattle fans, but they had a crowded situation at running back, and they had a fumbling problem with Collins, and we had a fumbling problem here when he first got here.
Right.
But he seems to have figured that out.
Yes. Yeah, it looks like he's holding the ball a little higher and tighter.
There you
and
go.
It seems to be working. All right. When we went through the defense, we spent a lot of time on the developmental players. So let's do the same with the offense.
Okay, so the developmental players have a mixed bag of players, and the developmental players, unfortunately, are not as good or not as you can't get as excited about them, I think, in general. But we're going to go through one at a time and talk about why. Buck Allen is the first. Now, he has played enough now to be a young producer, and he's in year three. The problem is Allen's yards per touch are still very low, 3.6 yards per carry, 4.8 yards per reception. He's improved a little bit as a pass blocker, and we really see that when we grade the offensive line, is that he's making some good blocks, and even over the course of this season, he's improved. He failed to pick up some blitzes earlier this year, I thought, but I think he has improved. He's still not a prototype third down back because he doesn't have that Ray Rice power and elusiveness.
Right. We don't see that second move from him.
That's right. And Kyle Juszczyk even, I think, was better. He's a little bit better pass blocker and also had more ability to catch the football, softer hands, whatnot. So I'd like to see more, but that's where he is right now. And I think he's running out of time, but he will be here next year as at least the third running back, I'd say. It's just a matter of what do the Ravens get out of him in his fourth year.
All right. Nick Boyle has at least avoided PEDs this year.
Yeah, well, that's something, you know. So a third-year player with a history of PED violations is definitely not what you want. I don't expect the Ravens to sign Boyle to a multi-year deal this offseason. So normally after the third year, you might think about a quality young player and doing that, but I don't think they'll do that with Boyle. He's had an 18-catch season, but he's got no reception longer than 14 yards, and he's been flagged four times. Two of those have been holding penalties. So he's primarily a blocking tight end, and to have two holding penalties is not good. And there are a couple drive stalling penalties in his four. So that's been bad.
All right. The guy from London, Illuminor.
So Illuminor has flashed some NFL ability, had a decent first start against the Bears, but his aggregate has not been that good. A raw score of 0.67 on my system, which would put him just above the replacement level. So without adjustment, that would be right on the DF border. I don't want to get into this too much, but he's played just above the replacement level in aggregate. Let's talk about it that way. 188 graded snaps this year. So the telling thing about Illuminor is that when Skura came back from his injury, he immediately stepped right back in. It wasn't a case of split time or anything like that. Skura stepped right back in for Illuminor when he came back.
Gotcha. All right, Chris Moore is a household name because of his special teams play.
Yeah, boy, I mean, he had a great tackle in this last game, and he's made a number of fine special teams play. He had the reception, too. What am I forgetting here? Had a couple of fumble recoveries, I think it was, last year downfield. He might have scored a touchdown on a block punt. So he's done a whole bunch of really flashy special teams plays. Honestly, that's as much as you can expect to get out of a fourth-round pick. But they thought they had an explosive downfield threat, and he's been very inconsistent as a receiver. So the nice thing about him is his opportunity is right now. The door is wide open with bad play and injuries on the wide receiver front, and this is his chance. I mean, he really needs to do it right now in his second season to elevate his play and become that receiver the Ravens had hoped he would be.
Right. So someone's got to fill that role. So you definitely have that opportunity.
What about this next guy, Josh?
Yeah, I kind of feel like putting the whole podcast on protest right now. I don't know how Breshad Perriman is still listed in the developmental category. Haven't we seen enough of this guy?
Well, you know, the question is there whether or not he should be in the transitional category or not. I did think about it, but I put Correa there, and I didn't put Perriman there. And here's my reasoning. Correa has failed at two different positions, and he's lost his job. He's out of a job. Perriman has played very poorly and done way more harm than good. He's almost in the Evans category of bad in terms of his play this year. But the truth of the matter is that he's still got a job and is going to be forced into still getting opportunities for most of the rest of this year, I believe. And that being the case, he has an opportunity to move up and play well. There are a few things that are going against him. Of course, the Ravens are not going to pick up his fifth-year option this offseason. It would be ridiculous to do so. I feel confident I would bet a lot of money they will not, even if he played pretty well the rest of the year. That leaves him with one more season on the Ravens in 2018. It feels like he just got here, but he'll be in his fourth season next year, and that'll probably be his last season as a Raven. We'll see where he ends up in the NFL after this, but it's a sad fate of a three-year player that you don't completely trust. You don't sign him before his fourth year to any kind of a long-term deal, and that's going to be the case with Perriman. He's going to have to play for a contract in his fourth year, and then when he does that, he will likely not be a Raven.
In the pregame interviews in Tennessee with the TV announcers, John Harbaugh said Breshad Perriman has trouble catching the ball. He's a wide receiver who cannot catch the ball, and I think as many catches as he has, he's probably close to that with the amount of balls he's knocked into the other team's hands.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously a couple times this year already. And the first one, you know, there's a lot of blame to go around on that play. We're going to get to a question about that, I think, in the mailbag, so I'm going to defer to the discussion of that. But I don't think it was 100% on Perriman, but I think some of it was on Perriman for not going up to get that football.
Okay, and you're talking specifically about the Tennessee game, where he had his worst game of the season for a guy who has a lot of bad plays.
Yeah.
All right, I'll move on. I'll leave Perriman there because you're the smarter one, but I'm not buying it.
Okay, that's fine. You're playing the podcast under protest.
Yes. Yeah. Let's just move on. Let's pretend we didn't even have that guy there, and we'll just move on to Segura.
Okay, so Matt Skura has been a very pleasant surprise. So he was probably about the 10th lineman when camp started, and he's now come up to be the starting right guard in week three. And you think about all the other guys that are gone right now, Siragusa, Yanda, Lewis, Illuminor will be returning next year. Of course, he's healthy now, but all those guys are going to compete with him next year. So it's not obvious to me he's going to have a starting role next year, although he's played reasonably well and fairly consistently too, honestly. So I think that he certainly has earned a spot on the roster, but I don't think he's necessarily be a starter. And it's a weird situation, of course, in the NFL, but he's a Duke guy, could probably make the line calls on the offensive line, would be my guess. And his best chance to have a starting role with the Ravens, maybe to have Jensen leave in free agency. Not something the Ravens want, or I think Ravens fans want, but that might be Skura's best chance. And he probably should stick around as the eighth or ninth lineman because he gives you some good center guard swing play. And a lot of players, they're center guards in name only. So you think they can do it, but then they actually have to do the other duties of the center and they might not be that good at it. And Skura's played some center in the preseason, I think can do it. Anyway, excited to have him on the roster. I wouldn't really be all that thrilled if he were a starter next year. I would have thought something else went wrong, like Yanda had to retire, or Siragusa just falls off the map, or Lewis comes back and they want to stick him at tackle because of other injuries. But a lot of things would have to kind of go wrong for Skura to be a starting guard next year for the Ravens.
Gotcha. Well, I like Jensen, so I hope that doesn't happen. I hope we keep Jensen long term.
Right.
We've got a lot of tight ends on this team, and I guess Max Williams is more of the blocking tight end.
Well, you know, he's gone back and forth. In his first couple of years, he's pure pass receiving tight end, not much of a blocker at all. But in this year, he's had more success as a blocker, and they've used him as a fullback at times. They've done some weird things with him. They've used this full house backfield a little bit with him and Ricard, or sometimes him and Boyle and Ricard, along with one running back. And they've gotten a little bit more out of him in that respect. He needs to have more consistency in terms of time on the field and in terms of catching the ball. He's probably done more after the catch than any of the Ravens' tight ends, maybe with the exception of Watson. But he's done some things after the catch that I like in terms of picking up yards upfield.
All right. Kenneth Dixon is out for this season. He's already had surgery.
Mm-hmm.
How do we?
And he's serving his suspension concurrently, so that's very efficient of him.
That's nice that they're letting him do that both at the same time.
Yeah. He needs to get back on the field and make sure he never has another program event. So, you know, to have 2 years in the league and already have trouble with that is bad, and he'll need to come back and avoid trouble for the next 2 years to have any kind of a real career where he earns some money in the NFL. You know, he's going to make about $1.8 million, I guess it is, or maybe a little bit more on his rookie deal over 4 years. But if he fails to earn his second contract, which is what can often happen with running backs who get in trouble, then he won't make much more money in the NFL. So it'd be a shame if that happened. Dixon appears to have real talent. He and Collins might be enough at running back to try next year, or maybe you go with another draftee in the third or fourth round to have a three-headed monster. But Dixon was the guy who was going to be the lead back this year, and the Ravens lost him fairly early. Then we found out about the suspension, and you know, now we don't know about his future. But he is still in my developmental group with only 2 years down.
Right. Speaking of being the guy, I think last season I saw Alex Lewis, and it seemed like he was going to step up and be the be a strong guard for this line.
Yeah, he played well when he was there. He played like crap at tackle. So he's in a lot of the Hurst mode here of being probably better on the inside. And if the Ravens would use him there, I thought that not only did he show some power on the inside at guard, but he also showed very good decision-making ability in level two for a guy who's thought to not really have that much foot speed. He had a good ability to decide on which block he wanted to make and line him up in level two. And I like that. I really want that in a guard. We haven't seen yet if he can do what Hurst has done in terms of pulling. But I'll tell you what, if Greg Roman can get James Hurst to learn how to pull, I would think he can get Alex Lewis to learn how to pull too. So if the Ravens are without Hurst next year because he signs and goes elsewhere, I think Lewis can be the guy as well and hopefully play nearly the same level that Hurst has at a bare minimum.
All right. You've got Patrick Ricard on this side of the ball instead
That's
of defense.
Right. That's right. So he hasn't played a defensive snap in the last 3 weeks, during which time he's played 27 offensive snaps. And the last time he played any significant defensive snaps was an injury-marred game against the Bears where he was forced into action for 20 snaps. And it's not, you know, they don't even really consider him a defensive player anymore. He's an emergency defensive player, but he's a fullback. That's what he is, and an occasional tight end. I think they're really enamored with the idea that they could have a fairly nimble, large man who's nasty at fullback. I have not really seen that he's been a great blocker so far. I'd like to see more of him in that respect. I'd like him to see him be more consistent and get more drive in his blocks, like you'd see Avante Leach, who's 40 pounds lighter, but Ricard should be, you know, generating more momentum than and developing maybe some better blocks. So he's a rookie player, undrafted free agent. There's real hope he could be a better player than what he is right now. And a combination of value on special teams, emergency value on defense, and a fullback role would project him into the top category.
All right. How is Nico on the Ravens yet not related to Tony Siragusa? I mean, is Siragusa that common of a name?
I really have no idea. There was a site that the census put out a few years ago that you could type in your last name, and there were at that time there were 71,000 last names in the United States, and I typed in McCusick, and it was number 69,000 and something in terms of how common the name was.
All right.
So if you put in Smith or Jones, it might be number one, but anyway, I imagine
there's a Dr. Soroka out there that I haven't met yet, but lots of people have met him and told me about him.
Okay, very good. Very good. There's a water commissioner down in somewhere in Louisiana who's a McCusick. So anyway, right. Is what it is. So anyway, we've talked about – so no, we didn't talk about Circus. So Circus returns as a second-year player, had a knee injury. I hope that, again, this is a player who can take some time on his upper body while still rehabbing that knee. It doesn't always work out that way, but he definitely is a guy who more conversion of fat to muscle, much in the way that Jensen did it in this offseason, would be a good thing for him.
All right. You had, I guess when we went through it with the defensive guys, they were younger and I guess had more room to grow. Is that something that because the Ravens have focused their drafts over the years on defense?
Yeah, especially recently. I think the top four draft picks going to the defensive side, and of those, I guess all four, we got Bowser, Williams, Marlon Humphrey's already in the top category, and Wormley is developmental also. So you end up with a lot of developmental players if you've got recent draft picks there. So, you know, it's not like they have some. They have Lewis and Siragusa. Dixon was a draft pick last year. Skura was undrafted and is actually playing on his first year now, so he's effectively a rookie. Then you have Moore, a draft pick last year. Luminor, a draft pick this year. But the players are not as young. Allen, Boyle, Williams are all in their third year. I might have missed someone on this list as well. So, you know, you have generally players who are a little bit older and not as good, not as likely to move up. And, you know, I'm just not as excited about this offensive group of players. And it's not unexpected because, hey, the offense has not played all that well. I mean, there's right. not a lot to get excited about. So, you know, they've got a fair number of young players, but I'm not as excited about their future the way I am with the defense.
All right. The veterans playing for market value.
Okay. So, veterans playing for market value means you have to be paid a lot of money and really earning it right now. And not surprisingly, there's not that many players on the Ravens that are in that position. But Jeremy Maclin is there, Ben Watson, Danny Woodhead, and Marshall Yanda. Now, Marshall Yanda isn't playing, obviously, because of injury right now, but no doubt about it, he's worth the money if he were available. Woodhead will be back, and I hope he will still earn his salary this year when he comes back. Right. He certainly need the jolt.
Yeah, I mean, he could be as back as soon as the next game, right?
That's right, and if he does, I mean, if he plays down the stretch from week 11 on, he could be the player. From week 11 on, so seven games, he could be the player the Ravens need to make a legitimate playoff push. As ridiculous as that sounds,
I was
right going to
say, I can't believe you're talking about playoff push.
Playoffs.
We'll see how they do in Green Bay. Then we can talk maybe.
That's right. So Ben Watson has had about the year we would have expected him to have, given that he's been back. Not a real high yards per catch, but he's been a Flacco favorite target, and that's been the case with Macklin as well. Really like the game out of Macklin. We saw this last week with 8 catches on 9 on 9 targets, and that's the kind of rapport we need between Flacco and some receiver.
Right.
So that'd be exciting.
Yeah, Watson's frustrating because he has that rapport with Flacco, but he doesn't move anywhere when he gets the ball.
That's right.
He's a lot of dump downs.
A lot of dump downs, a lot of zero crosses, as we call, which means he's usually running a 1 to 3 yard pattern, either in or out. Sometimes it's cross, sometimes it's an out route. When they throw that ball, particularly on third down, short of the sticks by 7 yards, it's very frustrating that you see Watson trying to work for a first down.
Right. Especially when it's a 3 yard pass when you need 12.
There you go.
And so let's get to the Joe Flacco category, the veteran cap with value concerns.
Yeah, so there are 3 players I have in this group right now, and Joe Flacco is number one. And a lot of the franchise's decision-making has to revolve around how they're going to deal with Joe. If they think he's done, or when they think he's done, it's an enormous organizational moment because there'll be a lot of dead money to be eaten. And at that same time, they'll make undoubtedly a number of complementary moves that go with them, which means you do other purging at the same time, and you try and get younger all at once. The other 2 players in this category right now, Austin Howard, I really thought hard about whether he's playing for market value or he's a veteran cap value concern. And the reason is that Howard plays at a position where the entire league is very thin on talent. So I really could have put him in the playing for market value, but he just has not quite played well enough, and he's been too up and down. Every game seems to be a 1 or a 0 in terms of performance, and he's not getting those good regular C performances that you'd hope for out of a guy like him that you signed as a 1 or 2 year stopgap. And the Ravens will have to decide next year whether they want to keep him around at right tackle. There are a lot of factors that would push them to do so, but there's others that would make them decide that, you know, we really can't afford to do so. And one of the things is that we saw from PFF is that Howard had some of the highest percentage of help of any tackle in the league. And Howard and Stanley were both in the top 5 in terms of getting help from either a guard or a chip block from a tight end or a running back. So he's not grading all that well, and he's also getting a lot of help is not a good combination. Last guy in the category is Mike Wallace, who may or may not be around next year. He's complaining about a lot of things. He hasn't had a whole lot of catches. He's got something like 267 yards right now, and 133 of that was in the one game. He wants to see more shots down the field, but he's having a bad year, honestly.
I want to see more shots down the field too. If we're just bringing it up, I think I want to see more shots and less dump downs.
I think that's fair. I'd love to see a looser secondary. I'd love to see more manufactured time and space that would allow Flacco to make some choices in the middle of the field late. But so far that hasn't worked out.
Right. I want to see Flacco having fun out there is what I want to see. Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen that this year much. You mentioned Flacco parting ways at some point, and then it goes into a little bit of a rebuild. And you don't think it's this offseason for that, right?
I don't think so. But I don't ever really know what the Ravens are thinking in the front office. And it would be a very big dollar amount to eat. They do have some cap money or dead money coming off this next year, which would lead me to believe that they could think about doing it. But it's like a pig and a python, if you've heard that story. It's going to hurt to have this go through. Maybe it's like swallowing razor blades and having to have them pass. It's going to hurt to have him released. And at some point they're going to have to make the decision, and ideally you'd want to have one of two things be true. You either have a top 5 draft pick lined up that year, or you have a second, third, fourth round, or I won't say what round, but you have a developmental quarterback who's already had 2 years in the league that you really believe in, that's gotten some playing time maybe when Joe is hurt. And the unfortunate thing about that, and the difficulty in drafting like a second, a third, or a fourth round pick like other teams have done and trying to develop into a quarterback, is that as soon as Flacco plays poorly, there's a quarterback controversy in Baltimore, and nobody really wants that. I mean, nobody really wants to go through the pain of a quarterback controversy and all the...
Right.
it's hard. Crap and circus that goes wrong with that.
Yeah, it's really hard to do a smooth transition.
Yes,
when changing quarterbacks,
it's very hard. I mean, the only one that was ever done well recently was Peyton Manning for Luck when that wasn't
done smooth. Peyton didn't want to leave Indianapolis.
Yeah,
he was hurt, and they let him go.
They let him go, and then they had the suck for Luck season, and they indeed sucked and got Luck.
Right.
And then he hasn't been perfect, but he's been that was a good exchange of quarterbacks.
Yeah, there. even Favre leaving Green Bay wasn't smooth.
You're right.
It's really tough. I can't think of any smooth transition to quarterback that has happened in recent time.
Right.
I really am. The more I think about it, the more I'm starting to think that Flacco and Harbaugh are linked,
mm-hmm.
and that it might not be this offseason. You might wait till next season, but they both go at the same time.
Yeah, that's quite possibly true. Or it might be one and then the other, one season apart. If the next guy doesn't work out, or if they hire a coach to come in who thinks he can work with Flacco and get more out of him, but then that doesn't work out. All those things are possible. I do think there's the fuse is lit right now for Flacco. I think the only way he puts it out and really answers the critic is by a tremendous step up in play, where we see a return to a more confident Flacco, probably working with more weapons, but feeling more confident himself to take time in the pocket to make those late throws that are going to lead to more yards per throw in total.
Right. Maybe once in a while when you're doing these commercials, Flacco, just mention that football is important to you too. Instead of just, your family's important, but we need some football in there as well.
Yeah, Josh, you insensitive bastard. Yeah, the last thing I want to hear from you, Joe, is that your family's important to you.
I mean,
get the damn playbook.
Exactly. I know how things work. You can juggle family and football. But let's get a little bit more football in you.
All right. Let's go back here because we got sidetracked with the Flacco thing. I really want to talk about the transitional category.
Oh, yeah,
and
the Breshard-Perryman category.
Yeah, except he's not there. So
yeah.
It must be a misprint of some sort.
It's definitely a misprint.
Okay, we understand. It's under protest.
I'm going to leave the country because of it.
We had, yes. We never stop hearing about your vacation. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Exactly.
When Earl Weaver got tossed out at both ends of a doubleheader in 1979, I think it was, he protested the first game of a doubleheader based on the umpire's integrity. It was Ron Luciano who was the umpire who threw him out. And he made them read exactly that over the air. Anyway, so you can do the same thing, protesting the evaluator's integrity. And you.
All right, let's get to the transitional players. Let's just get into this.
Okay, so the transitional players, I'll read off the names. Luke Bowanko, veteran. Michael Campanaro, now in his fourth year. I have no idea what his future is with the Ravens, but I'm not expecting much.
Right.
Gavin Escobar is a veteran who's here, I think, only as a stopgap for the rest of this year. Ryan Mallett.
Oh, no quarterback controversy?
No, there's no quarterback controversy. Whoever, the Ravens' next quarterback is not on the roster.
Right.
I feel confident saying that. Vince Mayo is not is a decent special teams player, but he's not an answer. Bobby Rainey is a sixth year, I think, running back who would be transitional no matter what. He'll always be insecure about his job. Maurice Shakir is about the 15th lineman, maybe 16th, and he's now up and on the roster actually now with the Ravens. So oddball situation, but probably will never play a down. Terrence West, unfortunately, the injury, he's out now. He also had some fumbling problems this year. There's a couple of backs are clearly ahead of him. I think he's probably out, and this being his fourth year, so I think he'll be likely not with the Ravens next year or fighting for a job at the very best. Crockett Gilmore has been hurt too much, and now this is his fourth year, so I expect him to be gone. Brandon Cublano, we never knew ya. Probably would still be the 15th lineman on this team. Stephon Nembhard is a guy who it's possible he could be back again and try and get in with the Ravens because he is a tackle and the league is very short on tackles. So if you have to pick one player out of this group who might still be around for some value for the Ravens, Nembhard might be it.
Has he been playing this year?
No. He's on the roster, but he's on IR.
All right.
Same with Cublano. Neither of those guys.
I was going to say, I have never seen Nembhard out of these games.
Yeah, he played in the preseason. Tim White is a wide receiver who got everybody excited in camp but hasn't been around. And we've been excited by receivers in camp, whether it's I'm trying to think of the guy who was last year, which is the problem. You usually forget about him. But Quincy Adebojo And the guy went to Tampa that they really wish they had the second half of 2016. Can't remember his name, though, right now, so it's a shame. But anyway, it's a group of players that is extraordinarily large. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 players that you don't see any future for on one side of the football. That's really bad. It's not completely surprising given the total number of injuries the Ravens have and the number of gaps they've had to fill with guys like Bowanko and Escobar and Mayle and Rainey and Shakir and that's it. Those are really the guys they've filled in with. And the number of other injuries they had to kind of marginal players in camp like Cabano and Nembot and people like that. But, you know, it's just a very weak group, and most of those guys will not be with the team next year. I guess Ryan Mallett might be as the backup again, but that's pretty much the only one who's really likely to be with the team.
All right, let's get into the mailbag. And like you would think with a struggling offense, the mailbag, a lot of questions are already looking to the future. So we'll start with G.W. Shearer, who says, which is the biggest priority for the draft? Quarterback, wide receiver, offensive lineman?
Okay, that's fair. So it's actually a relativizing question and not one of these that's a rhetorical question. So I would say that quarterback I would not put at the top of the draft because I don't think they'll use a number one on that. So I think it's wide receiver or offensive line is a reasonable one that they could go one with. They could use a one at safety. If a real playmaking safety is available, I don't think that would be an unreasonable usage, even though, oh my God, another defensive player. They could pick a tight end, possibly, depending on where they're picking in the first round. I like a tight end in the 20s a lot more than I like a tight end in the top 10. So where they end up drafting might really play a factor in that. I'd love to get a real tackle, but towards the, you know, the mid-teens and 20s, you're not going to get a very good offensive tackle likely at that point. So, you know, I guess I like a wide receiver and I like a safety would be my two biggest, best uses for the draft pick in the first round.
All right. So you're still leaning on defense.
I think they need another safety at this point, but I'm not leaning entirely on defense. Okay, I think they do need to have an offense heavy draft. Yeah.
All right. Minion Hunter, the guy who has the possessed DVR that seems to speed up and slow down during NFL games, he asks, he saw Harbaugh in his press conference seem to blame the first interception on route spacing, which allowed Logan Ryan to peel off and tip the ball when Perriman should have had an easy catch and run TD. Is he blaming Marty Mornhuweg in this? His actual words were the spacing of the routes, the timing of the routes, and making the play on the ball.
Yeah, so those are Harbaugh's actual routes were exactly as Josh said. So he mentioned three factors, that the routes were not spaced properly, and that could be true. If you look at the overhead, the routes were close enough that it did allow Ryan to peel off to affect that pass where he shouldn't have been able to do that. But that could have been offset had Perriman gone up for that ball, and it probably would have resulted in a dropped ball that was also a defenseless receiver foul. So the Ravens would have gotten 15 yards out of it, and I'm sure you'd have been happy with that, right?
Well, that's the frustrating thing about Perriman is he doesn't seem to put in the extra effort to try and fight for a ball.
You know, the Ravens had Clarence Moore a few years back ago, a big receiver, had a little bit of speed, liked to run a nine route only pretty much, along with one route in the end zone called Zipper, which is in the back of the end zone where he could leap up high for the ball. But receivers who are not confident in their ability to take a hit to their ribs tend to be a real problem.
Yeah, especially when we had a guy like Torrey Smith who lived off the defensive pass interference calls.
You know what? The other difference between Torrey Smith and Perriman, which is one we've talked about before, is Perriman is not good at running through contact. So receivers have to get good at that because the cornerbacks, they're always trying to press you. And then once they're done pressing with you and they're running with you down the sidelines, they're trying to hand check you and distract you with arm stuff,
right?
That you have to be able to out physical that corner who's a smaller guy, get past his arm moves, make your own arm moves on him, and get down the sideline past the guy, disengage, and you know, when you're even, you're leaving, you better actually leave.
Yeah, especially when every year the rules adjust in your favor.
That's true. They have made it easier for the receivers.
So, all right, we got to blame someone, and Matt D. Simmons says, In my opinion, the offensive roster isn't the main problem. Teams do more with less. Just look at the Jets. Morningway clearly has no idea how to get the best out of Flacco. If Harbaugh stays, he needs to find a guy who understands the modern league or bring back Kubiak.
Okay. I mean, I'd be excited about having Kubiak board back. And it wouldn't even be that terrible if Morningweg stayed around the building somehow. I mean, whether he's quarterback coach for Flacco as he was before or is in some other role. I have seen creativity out of the offense this year. They've run the ball a lot of different ways. I don't know how to evaluate how much of that is Morningweg and how much of it is Roman. So I've given most of the credit to Roman, but it may be that Morningweg is a large proponent of these multiple formations and the full house backfield and all the things they flex with the tight ends and have a pony backfield sometimes. I mean, they've done more creative things with the running game this year than they've done in a lot of years. But of course, that gets to Matt's point, is that all those things would have been great innovations in about 1935 into the NFL. But in 2017, right? Yes, 2017, yeah. Now they're not that great.
I think if they can sign Kubiak early, that could save Harbaugh's job for another year.
Yeah, I agree.
So Clipper and Crows wants to talk about Cam Newton. Are the passing issues related to plays needing too much time to develop, like the issue was when we had Cam as offensive coordinator?
So Cam Cameron. So
Did I say Cam Newton? Cam,
yeah, but that's good.
I wish we had Cam Newton. Can Cam Newton be our quarterback controversy?
Well, then we'd have a lot of things said, but you'd at least get a player on Sunday that would be a little bit better, probably.
Yeah, and I think Cam Newton does have more time for plays to develop.
Yeah. So with Cam Cameron, I thought they did a good job in Flacco's early season. So Cameron was not his guy in 2008. So I'm trying to remember exactly the progression of offensive coordinators, because it's been quite the group that's come through. Cameron was still around to get a ring in 2012. So anyway, the offensive coordinators did the most for Joe was when they started really doing the boot as much as they did. I think that was in about 2010 that they really started that. So I'm trying to remember who was the offensive coordinator then. But Cam continued with the boot.
Yeah, before Cam?
Yeah, before Cam.
Okay, I don't know. It was Cam Trestman, Morningweg, right?
Cam Trestman. No, we got somebody else in there,
someone?
Too. Yeah.
All right. Either way.
That's okay.
Go ahead.
We'll get back to it. So anyway, yes, I agree. It's very important for plays to take more time to develop. And one way they do have ways to do that, they can keep more players into block. I think we've seen more of that the last week. And by the way, ample time and space was not the problem for Flacco in this last game. Particularly on the last drive, Tennessee effectively gave Flacco ample time and space and dared him to beat the secondary. And he did drive him up the field for a touchdown on that drive, but it took 4 minutes when they had, about 4 minutes and 30 seconds or something, and they ended up with about 50 seconds when they were doing the onside kick. But they had a lot of I'm looking for it here, but I'm missing my particular sheet for the fourth quarter. Anyway, they had a lot of plays with ample time and space on that final drive.
All right. I'm getting a theme here about the offense and these questions. So here's one. Why even bother covering Perryman? Is what
well,
Shane
you know,
Oren
that goes in the, our rhetorical say. Question bucket. It's not like I don't appreciate the question. You know, we don't even have to name the person.
I think it's an interesting move. What would happen if you left Perryman wide open? Would he catch the ball? I guess if you leave him wide open, you don't get the interception.
Yeah, yeah. Who wants to give up on the interception, right?
Right.
Okay, well, anyway, we appreciate the rhetorical questions. Perryman has to be treated like a real wide receiver who actually was a number one draft pick, and maybe you don't treat him like a number one draft pick anymore, but you do have to treat him like an actual receiver, and the Ravens need to as well in terms of designing opportunities for him still.
All right, well, Brown Derek, 49, says, do you think Perryman is living up to his first-round selection, and is it official that clear that Joe's got to go? I think we covered both of these enough today.
Yes, and the rhetorical questions. I mean, please, let's come up with some specific, oftentimes a schematic or technical questions. But I do appreciate the fact that you're listening, Brown_Derek49. But would love to have a question that's more specific and tactical.
All right. Connor Brooks asks, is Gary Kubiak the ideal offensive coordinator for this team? Everyone in Baltimore thinks so.
You know, Flacco was so good with him in 14, and the running game is effective. He made a star out of, I guess it was Forsett that year. You know, a lot of things were good about that team. They had a better offensive line, certainly, all things put together. So, yes, I would love to see Gary Kubiak back here as an offensive coordinator. There are issues with doing it, but it's one of the places where you can upgrade the team with a coaching move, and that would be exciting.
Right. It's all about Joe, and when we look back so fondly about that season with Joe and how he and Kubiak got along, Mr. Ed asks if play-action calls recently have been designed to keep Joe in the pocket, and how's that? Is that success rate higher than when he rolls out?
You know, it's interesting what Mr. Ed is saying here, because I have still noticed them doing a lot of the same play, which is zone block left, naked boot right. Okay, so they fake the handoff on a zone blocking play to the left. Effectively, all the linemen are out front, and basically there is one edge defender that needs to be fooled on the play. And even this last game, when Joe's been running that same play for about 8 years now and a lot, you saw the edge defender completely fooled by that. And in fact, chase after the running back who didn't have the ball. Flacco had a lot of time, and he still threw the ball underneath. So I think some of that's on Joe, that when he gets outside the pocket, he needs to try to throw down the field more often. When he had Torrey Smith, the ball would always go down the field, or it seemed like it would go down the field a whole lot of the time. And that's where he got both some long receptions and some tremendously long pass interference calls. So Torrey Smith's second year, I believe it was, he had the three longest pass interference calls in the entire NFL that year, 50, 50, and 60 yards.
All right. Dan Basel, or Boz1, has a whole bunch of questions here that basically he is saying the Ravens do a horrible job with scouting wide receivers, and we keep misreading the talent, and they fail. How can we get better at that?
Okay, so his question specifically is, could we do something to poach one of the Steeler scouts? Whoever the guy
right.
is
so he's
that's
saying
figuring
the Steelers do a whole lot better job.
Yeah, so could we get one of their guys? And that's an interesting idea. Can you try and poach talent from another team, offer them money, and bring somebody in from their staff to help the scouting of wide receivers for the Ravens? Creative idea, and I think it's something that the Ravens could do by poaching a Steelers scout, or you could just develop somebody who's a great scout internally. That hasn't seemed to work. Or the third choice would be you bring in somebody else who's really well known for it, not necessarily with the Steelers, but somewhere in the NFL.
Well, and it's also tough when they don't bring in high-level wide receivers very often.
Right.
So it's hard to compare them that way. He also asks if the Ravens should draft a free safety, and because cornerbacks are well-stocked.
Yeah, I think that's a little – we talked about that a little bit, yeah. But free safety and a playmaker like that is someone I think is worthy of a first-round pick if the right guy is there this next year. You don't want to ever be locked into one particular position. So you hopefully you have four or five positions at which you could make that number one pick, and I think free safety is a legitimate choice to do it this next year.
All right, here's a new question for you. No Flacco, no Perriman. Michael E. Herb asks, how would you rate the Titans' O-line versus the Ravens' O-line versus the NFL in general's O-line play?
Okay, well, I think the Ravens have done a really good job of doing a lot with a little on the offensive line. They've obviously had a ton of injuries, and they've gotten a lot of players certainly gotten more than we expected at the beginning of the year out of Jensen, and they've gotten more than they could expect out of the beginning of the year out of Hurst. You know, when a lot of people consider that an absolute disaster to have him be in there. I think you could say they did a pretty good job finding a stopgap in Howard, and they certainly have gotten a lot out of Matt Skura. So they've done a good job of getting a lot out of little, but the Titans' offensive line, I'd say, is definitely better, and I love the Titans' tackles, in particular Luan and Conklin, who is one of the best pair of bookends in the entire NFL.
Right. All right, Ken. Well, thankfully, we have football back in about 4 or 5 days. As the Ravens face Green Bay and kick off this second half and try to win every game to make a push into these playoffs.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's not the situation is not as bleak, and it begins in Green Bay. They need to win either 5 or 6 of these games. 5 if they lose to an NFC team. 6 if they beat both NFC teams.
All right, so gotta win. to make it easier. I mean, you got to beat all these backup quarterbacks that we've been facing lately. And without Aaron Rodgers, you would think this is a game that the Ravens can win. We'll just find out if they will.
That's right.
All right. Again, you've been writing on Russell Street Report all week during the bye week. What else do you have out there that people can go read? Really in-depth offensive breakdowns?
Yeah, in-depth offensive breakdowns. This is an opportunity to maybe go back and listen to a couple podcasts Josh and I did earlier. If that's not your bag, maybe read some of the old articles from earlier. It's at RussellStreetReport.com, and the column name is Film Study. Follow me online. It's at Ravens. Film Study Ravens. And tell them where they can follow you, Josh.
Section 336. We talk Baltimore sports. We talk Orioles, Ravens, and we make fun of millennials. And this week, I believe that Ken McCusick will be a guest for us this week.
Oh, man, you're bringing out the A-talent.
Every once in a while, we've been able to track him down for the first time this season, so that's always fun.
Don't you have a vacation coming up, too, that you should be telling us about? Because I seem to remember hearing about that.
Yeah, I believe I am in Nassau as we record right now.
Oh, that's good.
I believe that I will be there, and it's like low 80s. So I think that's nice weather to be out on the beach.
Yeah, certainly. We got that cold weather here, so you enjoy that.
All right, enjoy the cold weather. At least we're not in Green Bay, and we'll see that on Sunday.
All right, take it easy, Josh. Bye.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
Some cars are comfy on the inside, but don't have power on the outside. And some cars have the horsepower, but none of the comfort. I used to think there weren't any cars that were the total package. But that all changed when I got my Honda SUV. It's rugged and sophisticated. And right now, Honda has deals on the entire Honda SUV lineup. CR-V, HR-V, Pilot, Passport, you name it. So if you're looking for a car that's the total package, the only place you'll find it is at your local Honda dealer. Hurry before they're all gone.